Greetings and welcome to Complexity Talk Radio, Complexity Live with your host, Dr. Donna Maria Colbreth. You may call us to share your thoughts, to pose a question, or to give a general comment by dialing 914-338-1308. And now, Dr. Colbreth.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Complexity Talk Radio, Complexity Live. I am your host, Dr. Donna Maria Colbreth, and I'm coming to you live as we always do. And today is a special show where we're airing this at 3 p.m. as opposed to 8 p.m. due to the time difference in Nairobi, where my guest is from today. And while we're waiting for her to get settled in and log in, hopefully we won't have any technical difficulties. First, let me tell you guys, you haven't heard from me in like 2 weeks. As you notice, my allergies have just been, they've just been horrible to the point that they affect my voice. And as you can hear, it's still giving me a little bit of a kick. But nonetheless, as I always tell people, I bounce back. And I'm bouncing back, so I'm a little hoarse, but bear with me. Today we're going to talk about, and this is what I find so interesting, gang. Nendo Mukai, if I'm pronouncing your last name correctly, she'll correct me when she's live, put together a short film. And the film was titled Yellow Fever. And it really focuses on girls of color and when, you know, how colorism affects them. And she identifies it as yellow fever. And what I think is so interesting is that we need to see films like this. And she and I are going to be working together on other projects, focusing on issues affecting girls of color and colorism. But let me give you a little bit of background on Nindo while we're waiting for her to log in. Nindo is actually an award-winning filmmaker, and she's a graduate of the Rhode Island School of Design here in the United States and the Royal College of Art in London. Presently, she's in Nairobi. Her films include Yellow Fever, which we're going to discuss today, Real, Desert Haze, Untitled Dust, and The Mask. Now, her recent film, Yellow Fever, was actually her thesis film made at the Royal College of Art, and I think it was in 2012. And what it does is that Yellow Fever examines the effects of colorism on girls and women of color. And Nindo is actually what I love about her focus is that she's interested in the concept of skin and race, and the ideas and theories sown into our flesh that actually change with the arc of time. She believes that skin and the body are often distorted into a topographical division between reality and illusion. The idea of beauty has become globalized, creating homogeneous aspirations and distorting people's self-image across the planet. And this is so true. So what she does in Yellow Fever, Nindo focuses on African women's self-image, you know, how they feel about themselves, through memories and interviews. And she uses what's called like a mixed media format to describe what she identifies as a schizophrenic self-visualization that she and many other women, you know, all around the world have actually grown up with. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through and look at all of her work. Presently, she works internationally as a freelance director and an animator. And you can find out more about Nindo by visiting her website, Facebook page. The actual website is how you access it. It's the, and then the letter N, the letter G, the letter E, .com. And so we're really looking forward to this interview today and talking, you know, about the issues, about colorism. So this is going to be really exciting for us. So hopefully we can, as I noted earlier, if we don't go through technical issues, then we should be able to get through with the show and have a great show. So While we're waiting for Nindo, let me give you a few announcements. As you know, we've changed the format of Complexity Talk Radio. We were actually having segments now, which are going to be a little bit more intriguing and exciting, thought-provoking topics and discussions with Dr. John Kim and I. And it's going to be, we're excited about the new format. So we'll give you updates starting in May. That is when our new segment, the new segments will start. We're excited about them. We have also set up the show so that you can access archives of our show on Podbean. So it's Complexity Talk Radio on Podbean. We are also on iTunes, and we also have a new iTunes. We also have a new mobile app so that you'll be able to listen to the shows anytime on your iPhone. Or I think it's for Galaxy and Samsung. Those applications are coming in next. So we're really excited about that. And what you can actually do when you, if you go to Complexity Talk Radio's blog, when you log in there, you can actually click the link, and I'm going to give you the address of our blog in 0.2 seconds. But our blog is complexitytalkradio.wordpress.com. When you go to that site, you'll be able to find information on how to access the blog on iTunes and how to also look it up to download the app for your iPhones. On Twitter, you can also follow Complexity Talk Radio on Twitter, which we're just so excited about having that up and going. And if you go to Twitter to access us, you can actually go to, and I'm going to type it in myself. And we like the way that the expansion is going, the new focus. We'll be having sponsors for the show. On Complexity Talk, to access us, or follow us rather, on Twitter, it's Complexity_RDIO on Twitter. So we're excited about that. And the new focus. In the meantime, as you know, we will have sponsors for the show. If you have a business or company and you're interested in sponsoring or advertising on Complexity Talk Radio, please feel free to contact us at Complexity Talk Radio, as we'll start having sponsors and advertisements in May. We've put together a phenomenal team, group of people who will be working with us. We have Heidi Brown. We have Buddy Davis. Of course, Dr. Julie Jung Kim, myself. My husband's even going to be working with us, and Ada. So we're just excited about the new format and how we're taking off with the show. So today, what we're looking at our sponsors is being for the show today, of course, as you know, the National Girls and Women of Color Council is sponsoring our show, as well as our favorite, the Interracial Colorism Project. And each week, we'll have advertisements for each one. But this week, it's important. Let me go through the announcements while we're waiting. Don't forget, with the Journal of Colorism Studies, we have a call for submissions out. And that call for submissions is going to close now on May 15th. And the next journal that we are looking to publish is all about celebrating, embracing, and empowering girls and women of color. So we have a call out for essay submissions, and we received quite a bit, and I'm really thankful and grateful. We're getting more submissions from the international community than we are from people here in the United States. So I'll say once again, the call for submissions is out, and this is a time, especially for women of color, to show your support. This journal is all about celebrating, embracing, and empowering women of color worldwide. And one thing I must say, in a conversation Dr. John Kim and I had, we're looking to see submissions from women of color, especially if you're in charge of an organization. Let's do this. So, and I'll be right back, gang. Let's see. Nindo is here with us. Give me 1 second. Okay, can you hear me live? Mindo, do I have you with me? I think so. So we'll give her a few more seconds. But anyway, getting back to this journal, we're really excited about this special issue, and we're really looking forward to you submitting essays. We're looking for book reviews and movie reviews and interviews. And it's really great because I have a lot of young people who wanted to actually submit interviews where they've interviewed women of color in prominent positions. And we're just excited. So as we stand now, we have a lot of the essays in the review process with our peer review board members. And they're reviewing them, which I think is really, this is just going to be a phenomenal issue. And our hope is that we're planning to launch the National Girls and Women of Color Council in July of this year. And at the same time, we plan on being able to publish this special issue of the Journal of Colorism Studies. And what's really phenomenal, we're also going to have it as a print version. So you will be able to buy a print copy of this specific journal, which is going to be great, and it's published through Complexity Publishing. The greatest focus here is that this is the first time in history that a journal is actually celebrating, embracing, and empowering, and dedicating one full issue to celebrating girls and women of color. And this is monumental. We're going down, making history with this. So get your essays in. This is really going to be, just exciting. So hold, guys, and let me see if I have Nindo with us yet. One second.
Hello? Hello? Can you hear me?
We're doing this straight from Nairobi, so we may run into some technical issues, and if we do, then I will call her directly. So bear with us. In the meantime, what I wanted to talk about more was the fact that when we have this journal, when it comes out in July or August, the special print edition, we're going to have a special cover made, and we're actually offering new and upcoming artists the opportunity to design a cover for the new journal, for the special edition of this journal. So don't forget, take a look at the call for submissions. We've been tweeting it out. We're dedicated to tweeting it out every day. So it's going to be exciting, and we're looking forward to that. Also, don't forget to buy your copy of Live Life Beautiful, Affirmations for Girls of Color. That is the book that was written by Dr. Jung Kim, A.D. Elizabeth, and myself. And it's a book of affirmations for girls of color to help them learn to love and embrace the color of their skin, focusing on what I developed as the foundation elements of being beautiful, the self-esteem, self-pride, self-respect, identity, self-love. So look for your copy of Live Life Beautiful, Affirmation to Girls of Color. Again, it is available on Amazon as an ebook, and the hard copy, the printed copy, you can actually purchase through Complexity Publishing. And the good news is that this week we actually launched the website for the book. So it's the website to go and find out more about the book is livelifebeautifulbook.com. And that was launched. And when you go to the website, you also see that we're also now going out, giving speaking engagements, presentations, and workshops, as well as webinars. And we provide a listing of all the specialized programs that we actually do now. So that's exciting. Also, it's good to know that with my individual book that I wrote, Living Life Fabulous at 50, Affirmations for Women of Color, we also launched that website this week, and that website address is livelifefabulousbook.com. And going out, doing book signings, speaking engagements, along with the webinars and presentations, on that website, I actually provide a list of the actual workshops, presentations that I do. So I'm excited about that. So that's the good news with those two. Don't forget to look for them. And other than that, let's see, gang. We are also focusing in on, don't forget, the National Girls and Women of Color Council. We are having our first meeting this week, which I'm just excited about. And that's going to be held on Saturday at 2 p.m. in Owings Mills, Maryland. And remember, for the women who wanted to join the National Girls and Women of Color Council, we who are out of the state of Maryland, I will hold a special conference call for them on Saturday evening, as well again as I think next Monday evening, so they can also join. Because what we're hoping to do is take NGWCC national so that we can have individual chapters in each state. We can have chapters internationally. So we're really looking forward to that, and we're excited about it. And we'll just, you know, keep sending the prayers up that we keep growing and expanding and adding to what we're actually doing. I'm excited about the opportunities and the possibilities, working on other books and projects. So we're growing, and we're really excited about that. So I think what we're having, everyone, I think we're running into technical difficulties. And I'm going to try and see if Nindo can get through. Not, I may have to call her. And if we have to, we'll call her through again, because I think it may be on her end with the connection. But nonetheless, we will find a way. You know me, guys. I always, I get things done, don't I? So we'll be able to put it through. But in the meantime, while we're waiting for Nindo, what I also wanted to talk about was the fact that what we're starting to see more and more as we're talking more about colorism, how it affects girls and especially women of color, and this is why it's so ideal for us to be having this conversation, is because we have actually seen issues where colorism is, in fact, affecting younger girls, and some of the comments that they are receiving from other people are just really, really cruel. So it's unbelievable to see, here are some of the issues that they're actually experiencing. So hold on, gang, let me try Nindo one more time. Listeners, we'll be right back. We're having technical difficulties, but we will get the call going in 2 seconds, so please bear with us. Okay, listeners, we're all live. I hope you can hear us clearly. I have Nindo on the line with me. Nindo, there was some real annoying technical issues, but I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what was going on, but yeah, we finally made it on to talk together. Hi.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have you. Thank you for being available. We're really excited about this. So let's get going and let's talk about you and yellow fever. Yellow fever is just exciting, and I think it was phenomenal, and I think it was great.
Thank you.
So let me ask you this. You know, how do you define yellow fever? What is it?
Well, the reason why I called the film Yellow Fever was after a song by Fela Kuti of the same title, in which he was really castigating women in Nigeria for using bleaching products, and this was in the 60s and 70s. So I just thought it's amazing that so many decades have passed since, and the hype around skin bleaching has become bigger and bigger, and it's becoming more and more pronounced within different societies, not just even in Africa, but across the world. So my own understanding, the way I see skin bleaching, is that it's a symptom of the way society sees women, the same way that you would see bulimia as a symptom, like a condition based on a reaction to how society views what is attractive for women and the way women react to it. So that's how I see yellow fever. I see it as a condition.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it is. I think it is an issue that is a condition that really needs to be addressed. Even here in the United States, it's an issue where we've even seen situations where we have young girls who are trying to bleach their skin in order to be lighter. There are issues where you would have lighter skin and darker skin girls having issues and problems with each other. So it's been a really horrible issues with it existing in the United States. Now, what made you decide to make yellow fever? What prompted you to do that?
Well, I was researching for my dissertation. I was at the Royal College of Arts in London. And when I was looking at the way people who are termed as indigenous have been represented in film, in ethnographic film and photography over the years, and I started thinking, well, how does this reflect in terms of how we are represented now within modern media, and how does this make us then look at ourselves, and how do we feel about our self-image based on this, our representations or lack of, or the way we're portrayed in media. And that's when I started realizing, well, actually, if I'm watching TV in Kenya and I'm looking at the people on television, most of the women who are on television are quite pale in terms of their skin tone. And then all of them have weaves. Like there's, I think, one woman who reads news on TV, on our Kenyan national stations, all the TV stations that we have, there's one lady who has, like, her hair is in locks. Everyone else has weaves. And I just thought this is sending out a very specific message to all of us as young women and as professional women and women in general in the society, that women who are educated and informed and on TV, who are attractive and intellectual, look a particular way. And yeah, this is a portrayal of what, this is how we are starting to build our own understanding of what is beautiful and what is appreciated in society.
And I think what happens too, that sends the wrong message to little girls, where the little girls begin to believe and think, well, in order for me to be considered pretty, for me to be successful, for me to be accepted, I have to look like them. And I think that's when the distortion of who they are and how they look. And it also, I think it goes back to, especially with young people, little girls in school books, when they're looking, reading books, or they're looking at television, and they don't see people who look like them, with whom they can identify,
yeah,
you know, their self-esteem effects. So let me ask you this. How does yellow fever, the colorism issue, how does it affect little girls, preteens, even teens and women in Nairobi?
Well, within the film, you can see my niece very clearly saying, you know, she was 6 years old, and I just put the sound recorder on the table, and we had a conversation about the way she looked and what she felt was attractive and how she would change herself if she had the opportunity. And she was very clear when she stated that she'd prefer to be a different color and how her hair, what sort of hair she would prefer to have. And, you know, she's 6 years old at the time, and that, for me, was very difficult to sort of swallow in that moment, to accept that this is how she feels, even though she didn't feel any guilt at all in saying it. She didn't feel any, it was just a very natural feeling for her. It's like, if she was asking for ice cream, she wouldn't feel guilty, so why should she feel guilty about asking to change her color and her hair? It's sort of embedded in her from a very young age, and we don't even realize that she's consuming all this information that makes her feel that way.
Now, do
so we... I think this is going on in... Sorry?
No, go ahead. Continue, please.
No, I just feel that this situation is not isolated. It's not just her who feels this way. It's within... when you're at the schools, when you're, there's many people who are feeling this way. So she's just one example of how many young girls are feeling as they're growing up.
And, you know, you're right. There was a friend of mine, or rather a colleague I worked with a couple of years ago, and she was a white woman, and she told me this story of a little black girl who was sitting in a classroom who kept scratching her leg, and she scratched it until the point that it was ashy white looking. So she asked the little girl if she asked her why she was scratching her leg, I think, or if she needed lotion, that's what it was. She asked if she needed any lotion, and the little girl told her no. She asked her if her leg itched. She said no. So then when she asked the little girl, well, why do you keep scratching your leg? And the little girl's response was, because when I scratch it, it doesn't look black. And, you know, when she told me that, I was like, oh, wow, that is just so sad, because that little girl had been conditioned to think that any color, that her color being darker complexion, was not acceptable. It was ugly. It wasn't pretty.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Wanted to change its skin color. But what I've also noted, Nindo, and I was telling some friends about this just last week, when you look on television here, especially with the newscasters, the anchor women, they're all either lighter complexion or browner skin color. And I live in the state of Maryland. But we don't see darker complexion women as anchors on the news. On one of the talk television shows here in Maryland, I'm not going to mention, not in Maryland, in the United States, I'm not going to mention the name involved, but they cut the show of a very dark complexion woman who had a talk show that would come on every day. They cut it, and they claimed it was for bad ratings, but the woman was phenomenal. She was an intellectual. She could speak and talk on any subject matter, any topic. She was really great. I enjoyed her show, and I look forward to listening to her every day. And when they cut her show and just gave her field assignments, I was shocked. But here's the issue. This woman is very dark complexion, and they left the show on the air on the same station of a woman who's very light, very fair, very light complexion, black woman. But her show is not good. It's not quality. The woman doesn't provide the same intellectual thought processes. She's just not good at her show. But the conversation came up with a couple of my colleagues, and we were talking about how they took the show of the dark complexion woman off the air, left the lighter complexion woman on the air, and the lighter complexion woman is not even that good. So, you know, imagine a little girl seeing this. Imagine them when they're reading books, when they're looking at television shows, and to hear a little girl that she doesn't think her skin is pretty, that's an issue. how to respect older women there.
Well, I think the thing is that when you're, you know, there's this huge effect of repetition where when you get told something enough times, you end up believing it, even though you can say that we all have our ability to resist or we have our own intellect or whatever. When things are repeated to us in subtle and in unsubtle ways for long enough, we start to believe it. So, you know, you're talking about a woman who lost her job or her job was changed based on her appearance. Here in Kenya, if you feel, people will feel that you might get a better job because of your skin tone. If people then treat you differently because they feel that your skin tone is better if it's paler or badly if it's darker, then in the end it does affect your job prospects. If you're not going to get a raise or a promotion because people want you to look a certain way to be in a higher position, then yes, it does actually end up affecting your prospects. So you can preach about women being happy in their skin tone or being happy in their natural hair or whichever, but in the end, if you cut off your weave, if you take off your weave and go to work with natural hair and you get fired, then it's no longer a choice. And then you're not even able to consider it. It's part of the way, it's part of survival at this point. So I think it's for women who have grown up in societies that have these ideals, you're going to have to either fit into them or to find a lifestyle that doesn't require you to fit into them.
Wow, that's unbelievable. What about, how does it affect young girls there with dating? Is there an issue with them dating?
But there was there was a lady in the U.S., I know, a news anchor who cut her hair and decided to have natural hair. I think was it 2 or 3 years ago? It was like a huge deal. And I remember she ended up being taken off the station, I think.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember this lady. I don't know her name.
I know what you mean. I know the woman, but I can't think of her name. And just recently, another young woman here on a television station here in Maryland, she wore weave.
Mm. Mm.
And she was getting weaves that was making it look like it was natural hair. And she said she was told when she started being an anchor woman that she needs to get long hair and get some hair, longer hair weaved in or wear a wig. So she did that. And once she did that, she started climbing the ladder. She started getting assignments.
Yeah.
Things were going well. Now, just a couple of weeks ago, this woman also did the same thing. She took out all the weave, got a haircut, and she's wearing her natural hair. So we have yet to see.
Mm.
I think her name was Rochelle Ritchie. I think of it, her name. And I haven't seen her on the news since then. And maybe it could just be that I've been missing her. But I'm monitoring that to see, you know, what's going to happen now that she doesn't fit that European standard of beauty with the expected look. Because here in the United States, in my opinion, Nindo, they don't really embrace darker complexion women with more Afrocentric features. The closer you are to being more Eurocentric looking with your phenotypes, with the nose, the eyes, the silky hair, or the straight hair, more accepted you are, and gives them more, I think, ability, more of an ability to rise successfully. Now, let me explain. For women in Africa, and especially, say, for young girls who are starting to date, is there an issue where boys there prefer women to look a certain way? Is it colorism or affecting them?
Well, I can tell you what happened just today in the afternoon. When I was outside my apartment, I was talking with the caretaker, and I mean he's an adult man, and I don't know even how this conversation came up, but he said that there's a group, an ethnic group in my country called Kikuyu, and I'm Kikuyu. And he said Kikuyu women are the second most beautiful in the country. And I said, okay, so who are the first? And he said, Kamba, which is another ethnic group. And I asked him why, and he said, because they're brown. And when he's saying brown, he means that they have a pale skin tone. So the hierarchy is made based on complexion. And, you know, I just found that such a strange thing to say, and I started laughing. But he said it's true, being brown is beautiful. So, I mean, it's quite ingrained. I remember when we were young, there were women, there were girls in our schools, and you'd hear about someone being really attractive, like everyone keeps talking about her. And when you meet the girl, she'd be mixed race. So that was automatically a way for you to be on a different level to everyone else if you were mixed race.
Yes,
you were immediately much more attractive than everyone else. Yeah.
There was an issue here where I worked with young people here in the community, and dealing with a group of the young boys, and I was trying to get them to go to college or just to plan for careers. And then somehow the conversation shifted over to colorism and dating and girls. And what I found so upsetting was that the bulk of the young men that I spoke with, they really believed that the lighter complexion, mixed race women, did look much more attractive than women who did not. And the bulk of them were also more interested in having babies with girls who were either white a mixed race because they didn't want their children to be dark or to have kinky hair. When I would have conversations with young girls, they were so hyped up and into on having a baby that was light with nice hair, or good hair is what they would call it.
Mm.
And it would be that because I think a lot of this, a lot of the reasons why we see these issues is because what we actually see on television, what we see in corporate America, what we see as how we see, rather, people, and those people who are like black or African-American, who had been successful historically here in this country, were always a lighter complexion. And I think we're at a point now in history and in society where we need to embrace diversity more so with regard to skin colors, standards of beauty, it's just amazing because what you're telling me has happened there and over Nairobi, we see the same things here in this country, in the United States. So I think...
Well, that's the thing is that it's very global. It's not... Whatever is happening in the U.S. is going to be happening elsewhere. What's happening here is happening in Asia and in the Middle East. It's the effect of globalization. And the thing is that the most powerful cultural elements from the most domineering cultures are the ones that will remain.
That's right.
And it's European and Western or American, whatever you want to call it, cultures are the most dominating. And whatever they select at the top as being most attractive, most admirable, is what is filtered to everyone else as well.
Wow, unbelievable. Well, let me ask you this. You noted that skin and the body are often distorted into topographical division between reality and illusion. How are they actually distorted?
I think this has to do with self-image. And I mean, you can't even... I remember one of my friends this week sent me a photo on WhatsApp of a plus-size model. African or African American plus size model, and you know, and they're like, "Look, she's so beautiful, she's so lush, this is so great." And I said, "Yes," but immediately, even on my small phone, I can see that she's being photoshopped. I just find it kind of incredible that we don't actually have a proper representation of what a human body is, but we're always seeing it all the time.
You're right, and I'll tell you something else interesting. Recently, Serena Williams is a really big tennis star here, and she was on Vogue magazine. And I'll be honest with you, Nindo, I am a big fan of Serena and her sister Venus. I'm a tennis junkie. And they put it up on Facebook that she was on the cover of Vogue magazine. But the problem I had with it is that the photo was so photoshopped. And so I didn't even recognize her. Mm-hmm. I did not even realize that was Venus, that was Serena, until after I started the little byline. And I'm like, wow, my gosh, they photoshopped. And they do that here a lot. And it's also with the body image, you know, the shape of your body, you know, the hair, the nose. And what I found annoying was they altered her nose to such a degree. That's why I didn't recognize her. So they do that a lot.
Was it about a month or 2 months ago, there was a leak of photos of Beyonce that were untouched.
Yes.
And even her own fans rejected the pictures. You know, they're like, no, we don't want to see this. And you could see people writing really aggressive messages to the website saying that they would send the FBI. I don't know, they're going to do acts of violence against the people on the website. It's like the people, we ourselves don't even want to see the people that we admire in the way that they are, in the way that they look. We can't accept that.
She
looks without being photoshopped.
And it's sad because you know what that does, Nindo? That sends a message, especially to younger girls who are her fans, that they have to look like this. And it's sad because, again, it goes back, it affects their self-esteem, their love for themselves, their self-pride, their identity, self-respect.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that we did, we wrote a book of affirmations for little girls of color, and it's titled Live Life Beautiful, Affirmations for Girls of Color, and it contains 250 affirmations, and in there, we talk about the body, we talk about loving the color of your skin, your culture, have pride, and the reason why we put that book together is because Dr. Jung Kim and I, with all the little girls we were talking to and interviewing, and their mothers specifically, it was these issues where little girls of color were really thinking, well, if my skin is dark, if my nose is broad, if my hair is kind of kinky, I'm not pretty. And then that what happens is that I think it limits them in their ability to reach higher ground in life because they believe and think that they're limited. They can only go but so far in life. So instead of the little girl...
It affects your self-confidence.
It does, their confidence. So instead of the little girl who may be darker complexion, who dreams of maybe being an astronaut or a big scientist or astronomer, she begins to think, well, I'm not going to be able to do that or be or go into that career because of my skin color. I don't look like I'm not going to because I don't have the lighter skin or the straighter hair. And so what we're trying to do is what's beautiful is to say to little girls, you are beautiful as you are, and that you can't let... define you or put you in a box or say to you, one size fits all. In other words, as a little black girl or a little girl of color, you have to look a certain way in order to be. And the message has been said, it's so ingrained. And it's sad because you're looking at little girls who are thinking that, well, my skin is dark, so I'm not pretty, or my hair is kinky, so I'm not pretty, because... Again, it all goes back to the media and what the media is feeding them as what's considered the ideal standard of being beautiful. So I applaud you for making yellow fever. I think it's something that is long overdue. And the minute we found it came out, Dr. Jung Kim posted it on our webpage for I Am Beautiful. On our page.
Yeah.
And Nindo, people went crazy over it. They loved it. And
thanks.
Because, you know, they need to see this, and little girls of color specifically, they need to understand what colorism is or yellow fever, how it affects them, and how it's just something that if we don't start addressing it, talking about it, in films like your film, to me, a little girl can relate to your film more so than she can relate to someone there. And talking to her about it, because in the film, she can see and she sees. sees the character and he can identify. And what we found about it is that when we posted this one, let me go back to, I think there were over 81 likes on this one page for it. Total. And that is really, that was great. And people were loving it because, again, as one young lady said to me, she said, you know what, I can identify with this because I'm seeing it. And I think if we see more films, documentaries that really focus in on little girls of color and understanding how they're being affected, I think we'll see a big, big difference. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I liked what you were saying about the how it affects your self-esteem as you're growing, because especially when it comes to dating, if you're feeling unconfident and like you're lacking confidence in your appearance, it also affects what you end up doing with your body as a result. And if you get pregnant early or you drop out of school or you fail your exams because you don't feel that you have confidence, then your whole career path changes, your whole future changes. So you're going to have, you know, it's reinforced. If you fail in that, you feel it's also because of an innate issue within yourself. So, yeah, I think it's really important to address. I mean, women always, I don't understand why we have to be always measured by such a sort of superficial, you know, boundaries, the boundaries of our bodies. We just have legs and arms, and our melanin is there to protect us from the sun. That's, I don't know, we've changed what the body is from an organ to being some sort of symbol, something else that doesn't exist.
Exactly. And one of the issues, and you made an excellent point, because when the self-esteem is affected, it can lead to them making bad choices. You know, hanging with the wrong
people,
thinking that I can't rise above this level, or like with the girl, with my neighbor's granddaughter, I had to address an issue where a little boy in the neighborhood who was very fair complexion was telling this little dark skin that she looked like she was burnt. She looked like she'd been placed in the oven. She'd been in the oven too long. And when I addressed him, you know, at first it was a denial, but, you know, and I spoke to the mother about it, and she was like, so what? The little girl is dark. But trying to get through to her to make her understand that the comment that your son, and the little girl had a crush on the little boy. That was the whole thing. And he rejected her because of the color of her skin. And the, and the same little girl was telling me how at school, she was going to parochial, a Catholic school here. And she, I think she said there were not that many black children there. But the white children at the school would call her Mooly Marble and make comments about how dark her dark skin. And she was afraid to report it to the nuns at the school or to even come home and tell her mother, because she didn't want to upset things, you know, everybody. She was afraid that if she did report it, the kids would really reject her and not speak to her and not be friends with her. So what we're seeing is we're seeing a lot of children, young girls, suffer in silence. And with them suffering because of the way they're being treated or comments, then again we go back to being the level of pride, respect in herself, and love. They think they have to just... And one thing I think yellow fever is a good point with yellow fever is that it's saying to little girls, no, you don't have to believe that. You are so much more than people's words or comments about the color of your skin. Know that you are indeed beautiful. I love the film. I look forward to you making more films and working with you on other projects. But so let me ask you this. What have you identified as like the main reason, or what would you consider the reason for girls and women of color experiencing like yellow fever? What is like the culprit? What would you say is the main reason why it's happening to them?
I would say it's media, and it's the globalization of media. I think that's it. I think for us, we have a colonial history that's It's relatively fresh. It's about one generation back because we've had 50 years of independence, but all of our structures that were built, the society that we have right now is built on the structure that was created during the colonial period where Europeans were elevated and Africans were suppressed. So I think media has to find a way to move away from... There's a lady who's very famous in Nairobi. She's called Vera Sidika, and she's a socialite, and she's bleached herself, and she's also done a lot of plastic surgery. And I watched one interview with her on the BBC, and she said very clearly that she just didn't understand why the media in Kenya was attacking her for her decision to bleach herself and to, do this plastic surgery and wear all these weaves and stuff. And I completely agreed with her. It's like the media portrays this image and then it attacks the women who fulfill it. So you should decide one way or the other if you really want to attack Vera Sidika rather than attacking her, change how you portray women so that we have a healthier understanding of our own bodies and what it is to be beautiful. It should be more diverse. Then you won't have people bleaching themselves or doing plastic surgery or doing any of these things.
As I know here in the United States, a lot of the actresses and actors, they have actually bleached their skin or actually had, surgeries done to alter their appearances in order for them to be successful. And what's bad about it is because we live in a society where, and like right now, let me give you a good example, what we're doing with girls and women of color is celebrating them this year. And we're saying to the world that all the little girls and women of color worldwide, they are beautiful. They have self-worth and value. And we're trying to everyone to lift them up, embrace, celebrate, especially our skin colors, the diversity in our how we are all different in our beauty, where I may look one way, somebody may have a different way. It doesn't mean that either one of us is beautiful. And we're also trying to teach them to also realize that your inner beauty radiates on the outside, and that's what makes the biggest difference.
Yeah.
And I think...
Yeah. You have more value than your appearance.
Exactly. You're more than that. And it's just like Dr. King once said that he believed, he dreamed of a time where his children, his four little children, would live in a society where they were judged on the content of their character and not on the color of their skin.
Mm.
And I think we need to see more in the society that we live in. We need to see more unity among women of color, embracing, the diverse beauty that we see, because it keeps going back to this, Ninda, where they're looking at the European standards of beauty, and they're saying, well, this is how you're supposed to look. I mean, I remember years ago, about 2 or 3 years ago, there's a magazine here called People Magazine, and they were actually saying, like, the most beautiful woman in the world was this woman who was Gwyneth Paltrow, was a white actress who's typical, very white skin, the blue eyes, blonde.
I know Gwyneth Paltrow. Yeah.
And then after that, they used Halle Berry, who's a mixed-race actress here in the United States, black and white mixed, and said she was the most beautiful. And then after that, this other actress, I cannot think of her name right now, she's very dark complexion, and she won an award, Oscar, whatever it was, for her role in 12 Years a Slave. And I cannot think of this woman's name right now.
Lupita.
Right, Lupita.
Lupita.
And then what they did with Lupita, they started saying that she was so beautiful. And it was like she was a trend or a phase, because then it died down. You didn't hear anything else about Lupita after that. And then they started, I think the next role that she was playing in was something like a Star Wars movie. But what we need to see more of is not seeing women of color when they do make an issue of their beauty or their skin color. It can't be something that's just a trend or a passing phase. This needs to be something that is continued. We need to see girls and women of color, especially with brown or darker skin, celebrated all the time, not just as a trend. The Lupita issue, Lupita was just like a trend here, or a passing phase. For a couple of weeks or months, she was in the spotlight. One makeup line, I think it was Lance.
No, but Lupita is Kenyan. She's going to come back, don't worry.
Oh, yeah, I know she will. Because here's the thing that bothered me. She's beautiful, but they only made her being beautiful for a short period of time, and then you don't hear anything else about it. And this is what...
No, but I think the thing with being in the U.S. is that the majority in the U.S. is of European descent.
That's right.
So when they, you know, it's just there's a limited number of women that they're celebrating, and then no one is there for an extended period of time. Gwyneth Paltrow is there, and then the next year it's someone younger who's somehow thinner than Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, and then it's like, oh, let's celebrate this lady with curves, and then the next year it's someone else with a different look. It just keeps, I mean, I'm even saying next year, but it doesn't last for a year. So
that's right.
Rather than expecting like Lupita to be on the pedestal for, you know, shining continuously and burning brightly continuously, there has to be more women, more diverse women of different types of women being looked at, at different points of time, instead of it being all Europeans and then at one moment you sort of expect Lupita to carry the light for the entire continent, the entire world. You know, she's just one woman. And she's done such a huge job. She's also really pushed this idea. She's done loads of stuff on TV and online in reference to being to her skin tone and being attractive and coming to understand her own sense of beauty. Like, she's also had her own really long journey, which she has shared really publicly. So I think there just has to be more. I mean, if for example, I can't hate on any singers, performers. If any of the top tier performing women in the U.S. who are African-American or Black American decided that actually they're not going to keep lightening their skin or wearing blonde weaves, or, you know, they changed the way, they already have a huge following. I think people will continue to follow them, but I think maybe they'd have to make that choice. If they did that and they already have a huge following, then it would introduce people to a different way of seeing women.
That's right.
It might affect their sales.
You're right. That is an excellent point. I think we need to see that. And I'll tell you something which I find interesting with what we're trying to do with celebrating girls and women of color. Here's the most ironic thing. We're not getting a lot of women, Black women especially, here in the United States embracing that. But we are also at the time, you know, a couple of months ago you were seeing issues where a lot of people writing blogs and articles on how women of color are not being celebrated, how the diversity of women of color, whether you're Asian, Indian, Latino, Black, or African, we just don't see it here as we should. But with what we're doing, we're getting a response, but I would have expected to see more women of color doing more celebrating and embracing, because that is what we need. And I think by sending the message to the world that we're stepping out and this is what we're going to do, whether you're with us or not, you're not going to stop doing. I think we need to have more determination and more of a big focus like that. So let me ask you this. How will your film, Yellow Fever, help girls, preteens, teens, and women of color understand? It's something I call a psychic prison, where they get locked into thinking that the darker complexion or hair is not pretty. How will Yellow Fever help them see past colorism and get over it and be able to embrace the color of their skin?
I Actually, no. When I was making the film, I was doing it more as a way of dealing with my own sort of insecurities and issues and things I could see within my own family. You know, like the first scene, I remember when it actually happened, the scene in the salon where the lady was pulling on my hair so hard. She was, I think, from Congo. There was a group of women who had come from Congo who were working in the hair salon in Nairobi, the one I used to go to. And they had all been bleaching their skin. And because of my skin tone, I remember she treated me so badly the entire day. I was just in pain the entire day while I was getting my hair braided. And I remember thinking, I found her so, I was thinking of her in a very condescending way, because I could see she'd been bleaching her skin. Her skin had been burnt. It was different tones on her face and on her hands. And I just thought of her as being a very sort of prideless woman. And when I look back on that day, when I was, when I was doing my project, I thought, well, how was that any different to me wanting to have long hair? I didn't have long hair that blew in the wind, so I was getting my hair braided. And I would have the same feeling the same sensation of having long hair. And I thought, why should I judge her for doing that to herself when all she was trying to do was to feel beautiful? And I was sitting in the seat, and she was helping me also feel beautiful. I just think we have to have less of a negative reaction to women who are bleaching, and to realize that we're all sort of sensitive and vulnerable to all these pressures that media is putting on us.
I agree.
And I think being aware of that is much more important than, you know, screaming at women who bleach their skin and saying that they're not proud of being African, or how would this boy understand what is wrong about saying that girl had been in the oven for too long? I mean, he knows that he's hurting her and he intends to hurt her.
Exactly.
But he can never understand exactly the meaning of it. Until he's older, he's not going to understand what he's saying. Where did he get those words from?
That's right. I think a lot of them, they're learning them at home. They hear adults saying it. And
yeah.
And it's just there. And then, of course, we also had an issue here in the United States where with the music videos that they were making, they were always using lighter complexion girls with the long hair or the mixed race.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A couple of months ago, there was a film being made. I think it was something to do with Compton, California, where black, think about the rap industry, I'm not too sure if my memory serves me correctly, but an agency put out an ad for girls to be in the film, and they had them rated as A-level, B, C, and D. Now, the lowest-rated girls were the darker-complexioned black girls who were heavy-set, wore weaves, and it was just very derogatory and condescending and insulting to black women, because they rated the girls as A or B girls as being the light-skinned girls with the long hair. So when we see issues like this, where you're rating someone based on their skin color on a scale like that, like the ultimate insult.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think we need to see more of here, if we take more of a stand on unity, especially with these issues, you know, and I used to say this on my show last year and the year before, boycott them. Don't support music videos. Don't support artists, singers, who want to embrace that culture or that belief that lighter complexion and have certain, you know, the hair or the nose in order to be acceptable or beautiful, or for them to even want to put them in a video. Boycott them. Don't support them. And until we start doing that and really understand from a deep intellectual point, I think until they start understanding how hurtful it is and how they can scar someone's self-esteem and self-worth by saying to them, you're not because you're dark. It's just like when on Facebook, and I've been monitoring this for over a year. I have different accounts on Facebook for my different projects. And what I've noticed, Mindo, is when somebody would post a picture about a baby or a little girl who was light skin or the silky hair, it was all of the likes. They would get thousands and thousands of likes. But if there was something posted for a darker complexion little girl saying that she was beautiful, you just didn't see the likes coming. I've even noticed also with one of the pages we have on Facebook, I Am Beautiful, we have an audience of people there, things like 4,000 people who liked I Am Beautiful. But what I have noticed is that if I posted anything there for a darker-skinned little girl, like applauding her or celebrating something that she was doing, it didn't get that many likes. But if it was something that was mixed race or a lighter complexion girl, Mindo, the likes would go up, like, tremendously. And I observed that, and I also noticed that the people who followed us on I Am Beautiful, if anything was posted celebrating or praising a little black girl, the people who were white, Latino, or Asian, they did not like it. And I noticing that, and I spoke to a friend of mine about that, and I said, you know what? It's sad because it's so ingrained. I'm seeing it right here with I Am Beautiful, the reaction to people. And then though I'm talking about, like, this posted about a little black girl, Michaela Omer. She was a little girl who started, she made a product, a lemonade product. And she went on a show here, and she got it, I think, one of the Shark Tanks. That's what she went on. And they gave her $60,000 investment in a product. Now, she's a pretty little girl. Very dark complexion. And what I noticed is that the likes that came in, because I monitor this now because I'm want to prove a point, that out of 334 likes for this one little girl, the number of people who are not black or from Africa or Asia or from, Africa, one of the islands, they all liked it, but those who were not did not like it. And that sense of sends a message loud and clear. Whether it's conscious or unconscious, intentional, unintentional, it's still an issue here where we're seeing people, if they're not especially black or African-American or from one of the islands, they don't embrace anything that's positive for little girls of color. So we need to change that mindset. And I think films like Yellow Fever are what we need to see more of. We need to see more films that are going to talk about the reality of the issues, the body image, and the skin color, and help people wake up and realize the problems that we see in this country. But I wanted to play, for our listeners, if it's okay with you, your permission, can I play the Yellow Fever full version now for them to listen to?
You want to play the entire film or what?
I'm going to play like a few minutes of it so they can hear it.
Okay.
Is that okay with you, or do you want me to wait?
Yeah, that's fine. You can do the intro. I don't mind.
Well, let me just do the intro of it. I'm going to do the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here we go, everybody.
My sister and I are teenagers. We are having our hair braided at the hair salon. My magazine is on my lap because it hurts too much to read. The woman tugging on my hair is Amkorogo, meaning she could only afford enough beauty cream to bleach her hands and face, which are now yellow. Her true ebony persists on the length of her upper arms, the bow of her stomach, the breadth of her thighs. I see the West seeing us, and in response, this woman had worked hard to erase the element that marks her as truly African. Her own melanin, her own skin.
Mm-hmm.
trailer, everybody. Nindo, I love this so much.
Thanks. Thanks.
Excellent job. Well done. I applaud you. And I want to thank you for your time for this interview. It's been very enlightening and rewarding. And I do look forward to working with you on the projects we talked about earlier. And what I will do is send an email to you so we can set up time to go over and talk more in detail. But I wanted to thank you for this time. Is there anything else you would like to add?
No, I enjoyed talking with you. It was enjoyable. That was nice. Thanks for having me on the show.
Anytime. And if you can hold the line 1 second. Callers, I want to thank you for listening in today. If you want to find out more information about Nindo, please feel free, again, as I gave you the information earlier, to visit her website. And the website is NGE.com. And you can follow Nindo on Twitter, and I'll spell it out for you. The ampersand sign, NGENDOMUKII. And if you get a chance, listeners, please go to her website. Follow Nindo because she's going to be she's phenomenal, excellent filmmaker. And once again, the film is Yellow Fever. And you can also, when you go to a website, if you click the tab for Yellow Fever, you'll be able to go through it and listen to it and just learn. And I think it's really important, parents, mothers, fathers, guardians, aunts and uncles, family members, to look at Yellow Fever and help you. That'll help you to understand how to explain colorism and how it affects little girls of color. And it scars them, and it does affect their self-worth and self-esteem. So I want to thank you all for tuning in, and we look forward to you joining us next week for Complexity Talk Radio. Everyone have a great night, great afternoon, rather, and we'll talk to you soon. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you for joining us for Complexity Talk Radio, Complexity Live, with Dr. Donna Maria Colbreth. You may contact us at 866-829-0163. We are looking forward to your tuning in next Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Until then, remember, dare to be different and dream in color. For Complexity Talk Radio, Complexity Live, this is Heidi S. Montross signing off. Good night, everyone.